Well, good evening. I greet you in Jesus' name. What a privilege, what a blessing, what a treat to come here and listen to young people singing after what I would call an especially dark week in the United States of America. After we witnessed so much petty bickering between the Republicans and the Democrats, and after this neighboring state passed a very brutal, very ruthless ruling relating to unborn children, you can sometimes look at all those dark things and you think, what's this world coming to? Is there anything good left in the land? Is there anything bright? Is it all dark? Then we come in here and it's warm, the lights are on, and there's young people who have taken the day. I guess it was the whole day, wasn't it? And you're up here and you're singing and you're smiling, and there's a song, and there's, like you said, a joyful noise coming forth from the singing. I just want to bless you and thank you for sharing those songs. A couple of them are new to me, but like Brother Leonard said, when I looked at the crowd, I didn't count them exactly. You said maybe 105. When I looked at that crowd of young people, and I don't know what your ages are, I'm guessing maybe there were some 15-year-olds, maybe up to mid-20s somewhere. 13 and up, okay. Can you imagine the potential? 105 young people and the potential that you have. Can you imagine where you all could be in 10 years from now? I don't know if you'll all be in Pennsylvania. Hopefully not. You might be scattered all across the world. Can you imagine the good that could be coming? And the little bit of light that was shown here today in the teaching and the singing, think of that going forth and growing in your lives and you all going out and making a difference somewhere. I'm sure God has a place for you. Well, for an introduction to the message tonight, I'd like to invite you to Luke 15. I understand that today you were considering the subject of victory when it comes to moral purity. I understand that you had a message this morning on a very important subject as it relates to Christian victory, moral purity, and that is of the indwelling of the Holy Spirit. And I'm sure you've looked at some very good thoughts, very good inspiration so far. Tonight I want to share something that I have found to be very true in my own life, in my own struggle, as I will call it, to getting victory and moral purity. It's something that I've found to be very, very powerful. And I think sometimes young people maybe overlook this. And maybe dads and moms, even grandparents, overlook how powerful this one thing that we want to look at tonight is. And just as an introduction to this powerful part of the piece of the puzzle, if you will, I'd like to read Luke 15, the story of the young man who left his parents. We'll start here at verse 11. And he said, a certain man had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would fain have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. And when he came to himself, he said, how many hired servants of my father's had bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? And I'm going to stop right there. What we just read there is a perfect picture of a young person, a middle-aged person, a grandpa or grandma who is caught up and bound by sin, no matter what that sin might be. It might be moral purity. It might be materialism. It could be unforgiveness. Whatever the sin may be, it's a perfect picture of what it's like. Here this young man was. He was in his father's house. He had everything he could possibly want. And as Christians, when we're living right with God and have a relationship with Him, we have everything we could possibly want. We have food and more than enough. We're fed from our parents. We're fed by our church leaders and preachers on a Sunday morning. We're fed in our Bible devotions. But when we walk out and we give ourselves over to sin, whatever that sin might be, something happens that all those wonderful things are taken away. And suddenly, like this man, you find yourself in a faraway country, something that's not familiar. You find yourself in a land that has a mighty famine. And Satan, as he is well known to do, he makes it sound like if you'll just go over and do this one thing or give in to this one temptation, you're going to have a feast. You're going to be filled. You're going to be satisfied. And you know what it's like. You go over there and you try it. It doesn't satisfy. And the more you dabble in it, the more you play with it, the more you try it, you're just like this man. You would be glad to eat pig food if it would fill you. But there is nothing there to fill you. And you are perishing with hunger. Now, what can happen at a time like this is very important. Sometimes there's young people who are caught up in moral failure who at this point say, you know what, I really don't like what I'm experiencing. Not too long ago, we were maybe 3-4 years ago talking with a young fellow. He came, he confessed that he had been wrapped up in a pretty tight web. It was a pretty terrible web. It involved other people. And he said things like this, I don't like it. I just feel terrible. I just don't like the feeling I'm getting when I'm in this situation. And we talked to him, we tried to help him to this next step that I'm going to tell you about. And it seemed he just never got there. And sadly today, I think he's still struggling. He doesn't like where he's at, but he's still in the pigsty. And he just seemingly can't get out of it. Just yesterday, see, today's Saturday. So yeah, yesterday, Friday, we were selling a forklift, a used forklift. And I had advertised this thing, and it was a forklift in very nice condition. It looked almost like a brand new forklift. And a man had called me from Southern Virginia and asked me a lot of questions about the forklift. And he said, I'd like to send two of my best mechanics up to see the forklift, but I want to make sure that I'm not just sending them on a wild goose chase. So he had me take measurements and pictures, and I had the young man who works for me, who's a mechanic, I had him go over it, and he serviced it, made sure it was in A1 condition, excellent condition. So by lunchtime yesterday, my phone rang, and an elderly gentleman said, we're pulling in the driveway, I'd like to see the forklift. So came over there, and there it was. I had never driven it much myself. Some of the other fellows that worked there had driven it more. And so I said, here, I'll show you how it works. And I turned the key on, got the engine to warm up, a diesel engine. It purred just perfectly. They said, my, it really looks nice. The paint's beautiful. And I pushed the accelerator that makes the machine go forward, and it just sat there, wouldn't go. I thought, something's wrong here. And so I played with the buttons over there, and the brake is unlocked. I pushed the button, and it kind of revved itself up a little bit and just sat there and shimmied and shake, but didn't go. It didn't go anywhere. Here's these two men. They had driven all the way from Southern Virginia to see the forklift, and I had told them it was good and it wasn't going to be a wild goose chase. So I went and got our mechanic, and he came out, and he sat on the thing, and he said, Oh yeah, make sure the brakes, it sounds like the brakes are locked. And he revved up the engine and it sat there and did the same thing, wouldn't go, and my heart just sank. These two men were there and they were looking at each other, rolling their eyes, and come on a wild goose chase. And the one man said to me, well, it seems like she wants to go, but she just can't. Right. And that's exactly what it seemed like. She wanted to go, but she just couldn't move forward. So the men walked off, and they were on the phone with their boss, and I walked off to the side, and I started praying. Mechanic, he walked off, and I went back on and sat on the machine. I said, Lord, I'd like this machine to work. These fellows came a distance. Could you show what the problem is? And I started playing with it. It would not move. Just sat there, locked up. After a while, our mechanic came out of the office. He was on his cell phone, and he said, let me check that. And he reached up, and I'm still sitting on the machine, and he grabs the seatbelt and pulls it across me and clicks it in, and I pushed the button, and it took right off. I said, thank you, Lord, thank you. The men looked back, and they came walking over, and they said, what was wrong? Here what had happened earlier in the day, I had come there and I saw the machine and went to make sure it was nice and clean. And I'd seen the seatbelt was clicked into the holder and I could tell that people had been sitting. I thought, oh, I wonder if the seatbelt doesn't work. So I just unclicked it and left it fall back. And our mechanic, who normally had driven it many, many times, always was used to jumping on with that seatbelt clicked in behind him. Never thought about it, that there was one little thing missing. He had to take that seatbelt, click it in, and that released what was holding that thing back, and it could go. It could go. The thing that often holds Christians back from the power that they need to live a victorious Christian life is what this young man in this story, verse 18, found. I want you to look at verse 18. Look at the second word. Will. Tonight I want to talk to you a little bit about the power of man's will. Look what this young man says here. I will arise and go to my father. And I will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. And he arose, and he came to his father, but when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. I will. I like how it says this young man came to himself. One day he sat down and he decided it's time to have a serious look at where I truly am. He took some serious thought to his situation. One day he sat there and he decided it's time to honestly face reality. And what did he do? What did he do? He did not say, I don't like the way I'm feeling. He did not say, I don't like how I have been relating to others. He did not say, I don't like that I'm not with my dad. He did not say, I don't like this pig food. He didn't even say things like, I would like to go back to my dad. I would like to have the food that's back on my dad's table. I would like to be home with good, solid Christian friends. He didn't say that. But he said this, he said, I will return, I will arise and go to my father, and I will say. He decided to take action. And he, we could say, drove a stake. And he said, I will. He engaged his will. Now we're going to leave this passage. I want you just to turn to Colossians 3, a very familiar chapter, and I want to show you this same principle in some other words. Colossians 3, verse 1. If ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth. And we could read the rest of this chapter and be inspired, but I want to stop right there. That word affections could be rightly translated your will. The word set simply means engage. I don't know if any of you boys here drive tractors at home. When I was a boy, we had a Massey Ferguson 165, and you had to reach down and engage the PTO, and that got the PTO spinning. This is saying, engage your will. Engage your mind. Engage your will if you truly are risen with Christ. That's what this young man did in the parable we read. He engaged his will. He said, I will do something about it. I'd like to ask this question. We're talking about the power of man's will. What does it mean to engage your will? And I want to, first of all, tell you three things that it does not mean, because I want these to be very clear to you tonight. All right? Number one, it does not simply mean that I'm going to grit my teeth and I'm going to force my way through this thing. I'm going to get myself out of it. That old forklift yesterday, when I was sitting there revving the engine up, I actually got it to move about 3 feet. Very, very laborious movement. So that's number one. Number one, when you engage your will, when you set your will, what I'm not talking about tonight is you gritting your teeth, making a fist, and saying, somehow we're going to get over this problem. I will not give in to Satan one more time. It might work one time. It might work two times, but it's going to be very laborsome, very cumbersome, and it will not go the distance. Number two, in what setting your will, engaging your will is not, it is not simply agreeing with the truth of the situation. There's many people who will agree that they're not at a good spot. They'll agree that they're sitting there, they're locked up, they're powerless. When you push the throttle, it just is like they can't go. And they'll agree with it. They'll agree. They'll say, like that young boy was telling me, he said, I don't like it. It feels terrible. All right? Reminds me of a fella I worked with 10, 15 years ago. He was in the same business as I was in, and he was having some financial problems, and we got talking, and he was telling me about some of the troubles he had. And one day I came across a book, and it was a very well-written book on the subject, on the industry that he and I were both in, and I thought, you know, if he could only read that book, I mean, it's a great book. It just went through and hit everything on the head, I thought, perfectly, that would take care of his trouble. And so I went and I told him, I said, hey, I came across this book, just excellent book. It would, you know, it answers all your questions. It gives a lot of good pointers on how to run this type of business. It was a landscaping business. Come to find out, he had the book. And he had read the book, and he liked the book, and he was actually promoting the book to others to read it. He was agreeing with the truth that was in that book, but I believe what was missing, as I evaluated what was happening there, he was not setting his will. He was not taking action. He was not engaging in what was actually promoted in the book. All right, so we're not talking about simply agreeing with the truth. We can agree with our intellect, but if our will is dragging its feet, you're going to get nowhere. You're going to sit there just like that machine yesterday that wouldn't budge, just sat there. If you have a will that's dragging its feet. Third thing that I want to say, that it is not setting your will. It is not simply having enough of desire. All right? Sometimes when we hear the Word of God read, or we hear a new truth taught, and we're sitting there, we're listening, we're stirred up, we get challenged, the Holy Spirit begins to bring conviction, and desire begins to work in our heart, and emotions might even come to the surface. We maybe even have tears. We're so moved by what's being taught or what's being presented. We might even make mental notes on how we plan to change, and that's all good and right, but desire alone won't get you anywhere. If all you're doing this evening is sitting here saying, I wish I could get free from this bondage of sin, it's a good start, but desire alone won't get you anywhere. Take this as an example. Sometimes you might be thinking about talking to your neighbor. You have a neighbor and you think, you know, I really ought to sometime in our conversations, I really ought to talk to him or her about the Lord. Do you ever have a neighbor like that? Somebody that you meet at work and you think, you know, I would like to talk to that neighbor or that person I meet about the Lord and just give a word for the Lord. And you keep telling yourself, I want to talk to my neighbor about the Lord. I would really like to do it. I wish I could do it. Wishing and wanting and liking to do it isn't going to get it done. But try this. Say, next time I meet my neighbor, I will talk to him about the Lord. All right? When you set a stake, when you make that commitment, there's a power there. There's a power there. If all you're doing tonight is wishing you could get free, or wishing that you could live a victorious life, you're wanting to do it, it's just not going to happen. It's like that man from Virginia said, it seems like she wants to go. Well, she did want to go, but there was something that was holding that machine back. So what is it? What does it mean? What are we talking about when you engage your will? Your will, the way God has made you, it's a beautiful thing how He gave each of us a will. Your will is necessary to give God permission to do things in your life that you cannot do alone. So long as you are dragging your feet, your will is dragging your feet, God cannot release His power in your life. It's not your power that's going to make the machine go forward, but your will can be like a brake that is set, that's stuck, because you don't have a commitment in your heart to actually allow God to release His power in your life. Your will can either release or it can withhold the power of God in your life. If you're living in defeat day after day, your will, you can drive a stake and you can say, I will allow God to work in my life. I will turn myself completely over into His hands. I will do what He's asking me to do. When you do that, that allows God's power to actually come alive in your life. Why does it work this way? God has made us as creatures of choice. We can make our choices without God interfering. Tonight you can choose life or you can choose death. You can choose to be good or you can choose to be bad. God is not going to come along and force you one way or the other. He needs your will to be engaged. He needs you to set your affections in order for Him to release His power so that He can do this kind of thing. A couple verses that summarize this. Think about this verse here in Proverbs 13. The soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made fat. But what's the difference between the sluggard and the diligent? Right? It's not a lack of desire. The sluggard desires. Sluggard sits there and says, I wish I'd have my barns full. I wish I could have plenty to feed my animals. I wish I'd have plenty to give to my children. So it's not a lack of desire, but the diligent person does this. He engages his will and he takes action. He says, I will do the next step that's before me, whatever that is. Get out of bed in the morning and go and feed my cattle or go and tend to my business. Here's another verse that I want you to think about, John 3:16, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life. It's not simply wanting or wishing or desiring to have everlasting life, but it's committing. The word believeth is an action word. If you don't believe something, you're not going to act on it. So if you don't believe that Christ can give you eternal life, you're not going to act. You're not going to engage your will. You're just going to sit there and let your will drag its feet and your machine is going to grind away but not move forward. Joshua said this, as for me and for my house, I would like them to serve the Lord. I hope they serve the Lord. It'd be really nice if they'd all serve the Lord. No, he said, we will serve the Lord. Right? Again, he drove a stake. He said, we will. And again, it's not gritting your teeth and making it happen. It's saying, Lord, here I am. I will open myself up to you and your power, and you make it happen. We will let you do this. David in the Psalms, oftentimes he would begin with a lament. He would tell God about how bad things were. But by the end of the Psalms, it's so beautiful how he makes a commitment. There's a psalm that says, what time I am afraid, I will trust in thee. All right, that's saying I will make that commitment. If I'm in fear, I will trust. In God have I put my trust. I will not be afraid what man can do to me. Here's one I like. This is the day the Lord hath made. I will rejoice. And we don't know what had happened that day. It could have been the worst day of David's life. But he said, you know what? I'm committing myself to rejoice. I will rejoice. Turn to Psalm 54. I'd like you to see something. A beautiful truth. Psalm 54 brings out a beautiful truth about setting our affections or engaging our will. And here is the truth. When the will is set, it is as good as if it were already done. I'd like you to notice, as we read Psalm 54, how David's circumstances do not change from verse 1 to the end of the chapter. But notice how his attitude changes when he makes a commitment. This was written when Saul is pursuing David. Look at Psalm 54, verse 1. Save me, O God, by thy name, and judge me by thy strength. Hear my prayer, O God, give ear to the words of my mouth. For strangers are risen up against me, and oppressors seek after my soul. They have not set God before them. Selah. All right, he's crying out to God. He's telling God what all is wrong, but it's beautiful. He doesn't stay there. Look what he does. Verse 4, he encourages himself in the Lord. Behold, God is mine helper. The Lord is with them that uphold my soul. Verse 5, he expresses faith that God will deal with his enemies. He shall reward evil unto mine enemies. Cut them off in thy truth. And then verse 6, I love this. He makes a commitment. He says, I will, he engages his will, I will freely sacrifice unto thee. I will praise thy name, O God, for it is good. And then look what happens in verse 7. For he hath delivered me out of all trouble, and mine eye hath seen his desire upon mine enemies. When you engage your will, It's as good as if it has already happened. I don't know what changed there. But till he gets to the end of the chapter, he's saying, I have been delivered. All right? He had driven that stake, and he said, I will allow that to work, that power to work in my life. And he says, I've been delivered. I've seen my his desire upon mine enemies. It was as good as if it was already done. Hebrews 11, when it's talking about Abraham offering his son, it uses some very interesting words. It says this, by faith Abram, when he was tried, offered up Isaac, and he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son. Now, we all know the story, and we all know that he didn't actually offer up his son. He was all poised, ready to do it. But he had engaged his will. He had set his affection, and he had said, Lord, I'll do it. I will. And in Abraham's mind, it was as good as if he had already done it. I will. It was as good as if it was already finished. Romans 4:17 tells us this, God calleth those things which be not as though they were. And to God, when we set our will, when we engage our will, it's as good as if it were already finished. When you think about Satan, one time he set his will, and remember what happened. He said, I think it was five times, he said, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend before the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. That was Satan setting his will, engaging his will. And it was a very negative thing. You see a lot of people who have engaged their will in a negative way. And it's devastating. A couple years ago, another story about things that wouldn't move. A couple years ago, I got into work early. We have a little garden center in Wernersville along 422. And I was in there working early, and about 300 feet up the road is a railroad track with a crossing. And trains come and go, and it's a lot of noise. They blow their whistle, and I kind of learned to tune them out. But that morning, early in the morning, I heard this commotion up there. And there was a bit of yelling and screaming and shouting. And I looked up there, and here, right on the railroad crossing, right where the bars would come down, sitting smack in the middle of the road, was a car, a little car. I forget what kind of car it was. But it was sitting there, and its two front tires were like this, right on the middle of the railroad crossing. And there was an elderly lady outside beside the car looking all flustered, and people were running around, and I thought, well, you know what, I better go help get that car off the railroad tracks. And I ran up there, and I started pushing on the car, and before long, some other men started coming, cars started parking, and soon we had maybe 10 or 15 men pushing on that car, and we could not get that thing to budge. It was just sitting there, just locked. I couldn't believe how wheels that are off like this to the side would just lock a vehicle up. It seemed as we would push, it would kind of like lean front into them and wouldn't budge. Soon a police officer came, and he pulled up, and he got out, and we were all there, and he tried to help push, and his cell phone was ringing, and he answered, and he said, train's coming, everybody get out of the way, get out in the parking lot, train's coming. And this car is sitting right on the railroad track, and that moment it hit me, I thought, you know, we have a skid loader down there, I wonder if that thing could push this car out of the way. And I said, should I go get our skid loader? He said, get it! Just like that, get it! And I ran those 300 feet and down to the skid loader, sat there and entered the key code. I was so nervous I could hardly do it. I got the thing started and went running up there behind the car, and we had a set of forks on it. And it was a big skid loader. It was one of the bigger ones that is made. And I pushed against that car, and my tires on that skid loader actually hopped. And we got that thing off. Less than a minute later, the train went roaring by, and the thing was off the track. And you know, I sat there and I was shaking because I didn't know. I wanted to make sure I was off before that train came for sure. But her car, we pushed it into a parking lot. And I thought, you know what? There's some people that I sometimes wish I could just take the skid loader and push them off the tracks. They're sitting on the tracks. They're sitting right in the path of the coming locomotive, and they've had their will locked in a negative way. I will not. I'm just going to stay here. And there's a train coming, and it's going to create a lot of destruction. Don't be like that. Don't be like that. If you're on the tracks, engage your will in a positive way. Your will is very powerful. You can release or withhold the power of God in your life simply by your will. Simply by your will. You can say, I will not go. Or you can say, Lord, I want you to come in and I want you to make me whole. I want you to clean me and I want you to actually give me the victory that I so badly desire. Well, I'm going to end simply by saying this truth that I learned was born out of my own experience. It's born out of my own experience. I thought I'd tell you that here in conclusion. Soon after my wife and I got married, I'm going to say, I think we're married now 24 years. Soon after we got married, I allowed myself to give in to Satan just one time, and then another time, and you all know all too well what happens next. And then there's a third time, and then there's more and more times. And before long, I found myself a slave to a very cruel master. And I found myself just like the young man here, the prodigal son, in a country where I was starving. I was starving. Terrible bondage. And I struggled for years, badly wanted freedom. I actually did. I wanted to be free. I actually desired to feel clean and good and whole again. But so long as I simply wanted, and so long as I simply thought it would be nice to be free again, I never got it. Never got it. And I knew what it would take to get free. I knew what it would take. But Satan kept telling me this: if you do it, it's going to be a terrible embarrassment. And if you do it, it's going to hurt the ones that you love. And he would say things like, is it really worth it? Wouldn't it just be better to die an old man and take this secret with you to the grave so it wouldn't be so embarrassing and it wouldn't be so hurting to the people that you love? And those were all lies, little bits of truth in them that, yes, there's some embarrassment and, yes, it would hurt. But there were lies in that. He would tell me, just hide it. Just fake it. Well, that was the lies that Satan was telling me. And one night, I would have to say, somewhat like the prodigal son, I came to my senses, and I said, you know what? I can't go on like this anymore. And this was in the middle of the night. It was about 2 o'clock at night. And I was laying in bed, and my wife was sleeping beside me. And I had enough of the pigsty. I knew I had to get help. And that night, I made a commitment. I said, I will take the next step. And something very beautiful happened in that I immediately felt a peace come over me. I knew exactly what I was going to do the next morning when I woke up. I knew exactly the steps that had to be taken, but I had a peace. Never before had I said, I will take the next step. And what was so beautiful was that night I slept like a baby. The rest of the night I hadn't even done anything. All I had done was I had engaged my will and said, I will. And the beautiful thing was, yes, there were tough things. And there was embarrassment. There was pain. And I will say this, the obstacles that I had feared after I engaged my will no longer looked so big and frightening. And God gave me the grace to walk through it. And my wife and my family to walk through it. And it has been a wonderful, wonderful journey. So tonight, if you're sitting here struggling, and again, temptations are different by ages. Sometimes it's, like I said, something different for the older people than the younger people. Please engage your will in the matter. Commit to taking care of it. You know, it's sort of like going on a trip. We can talk about going on a trip. We can make plans to go on a trip. We can even go out and sit in our car and enter the address into the GPS. We can pack our suitcases and we can throw them into the car. We can visualize where we're going to go. But if we never put the key in the ignition and start the engine, you're not going to get anywhere. And tonight, if you never engage your will and say, Lord, I want your power and I will commit to allowing your power to do whatever you want in my life, until you do that, you'll go nowhere. So let's commit our wills to God. God bless you.